We are so honored to have you join us for this episode of Beyond the Loss. I'm Aditi Loveridge, bereaved parent to two and parent to one living child. I'm a specialized pregnancy and infant loss coach and founder of the registered charity, the Pregnancy and Infant Loss Support Center.
And I'm Danielle Kaluski, bereaved parent to my daughter Emelina and parent to two living daughters. I am the co-founder and director of operations for the Pregnancy and Infant Loss Support Center. On this show, we share real stories about parenting and healing through pregnancy and infant loss. We allow space for the often silenced truths around loss to be heard. We offer an affirmative space for all people impacted by loss to share their stories, their triumphs, and their healing.
Please remember that the stories shared are personal stories and are not to be used in replacement of professional advice. Please visit our charity link in the show notes for additional support should you need.
We are so excited to have you join us for today's episode. Let's start talking.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Beyond the Loss. Today, we are joined by Agnes Jensen. Agnes is a mom of two, one in heaven and one in her hopes. She's the co-founder of After Baby Loss, an Indian community for pregnancy and infant loss. I'm super excited that you're here with us today, Agnes. You and I connected briefly over Instagram, and I just was really interested to have you on. And so thank you so much for being here.
And thank you, Aditi, for having me. It's so honored to be here with you today.
Thank you. Can you tell our listeners who you are, a little bit about your journey and what led you to this place today?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Aditi said, I am Agnes, and I'm born and brought up in India. And I'm from Tamil Nadu, which is in the southern part of India. And I was doing my master's in computer science, and I had an opportunity to go to Denmark for a year for an internship. So I came here 6 years ago, and then life happened. After internship, I was able to stay in this country, and then I made a life here. And now I live with my husband, Yebe, and our dog, Barney, and that is about where I'm from. And how did I get here is, and after our marriage, we were trying for child, and we had trouble conceiving, and we struggled with infertility. So we went on to get the treatment. And then one of our treatment worked, and that's how we conceived our son, Elliot, in 2019. The pregnancy was perfectly okay. It was going so well. I was in risks for gestational diabetes and things like that. But other than that, it was textbook perfect. Everything was okay until 36 weeks. I did not feel Elliot move inside me. So we went to the hospital to get checked. And that's when we found out that he passed the night before. So, yeah, and that was really devastating. And we were like expecting him in a month, and it happened in 36 weeks. So it was really devastating. After that, the journey of loss began, and I did not find any support. Denmark had a very good supportive system. They actually had, like, immediately after our loss, they took care of us in the hospital. We were able to spend time with Elliot as much as we like. And then we were able to give him a proper goodbye. We had the funeral, and we decided to do the autopsy. So he was sent for autopsy, and he came back, and then we spent a little time with him, and then we had a funeral for him. We said goodbye. So that happened. But then after a few days is when I really started feeling the loss. I had a very supportive family here in Denmark, but still my family from India was not able to come to Denmark because that's when the pandemic started and they locked down the country, so they weren't able to travel. So I was here all alone and I'm the only one living here in Denmark. So that was, I couldn't meet my family and they couldn't be here for me. So that was also a little more devastating. I had to do this all alone. And then came all the cultural differences that made me really put me in a very dark place because I wasn't getting the support that I needed, even though I had people here who could understand me. It was more than just people sitting with me. I needed someone who could understand in my language, in my culture, because like after 5 days, everybody was telling me to forget about him and move on. So I couldn't really do that. And that's when I started hunting down on the internet. After like some weeks of hunting, I actually found one article. I really wanted to connect to the mothers like who had this experience, like Indian moms especially I was hunting for. And I wanted to find someone. And I found this one article on Still Standing magazine. And that was written by my now friend, Kavita. She wrote about her loss in 20 weeks. And I was really able to resonate with her feelings. And then we connected over Facebook. And then we became friends. And she was really there for me. And she was able to understand the cultural part of the loss. So I actually felt like, okay, there is someone really out there that actually know what I'm going through. And that's how we connected. And through her, like two of us became four. And then there were like a lot of moms joining us. And then we were four people that were close friends. And then now we are close friends. And that's how we actually thought, okay, there is another community out there. There is women out there that needs a little bit of help, support that we could offer. And honestly, we thought we were not ready for that because we were still going through. We were in the first year of grief and we ourselves didn't know what we were doing. But still, we felt like, okay, we can sit with someone else in their grief. That we can do. And that's what we're going to do. And then we started this Indian community called Have to Baby Loss. And that's where here we are. It's been a year that we started it. So that's how it's going.
Wow. Thank you so much, Agnes, for sharing your journey with Elliot. And then kind of, it sounds like the gaps in support that you noticed, and then what you're doing for the Indian community who's experiencing mm-hmm. baby loss, because it's so under supported or talked about in our community. For those of us, or not for those of us, but for those of our listeners that maybe are not South Asian or Indian, when you talk about you did receive support in Denmark, but it wasn't like what you were needing, can you tell us a little bit more of like what you received and how that wasn't meeting your needs?
Yeah, absolutely. So in Denmark, what they did was like immediately after our loss, the doctor there, the first thing I noticed was the empathy that I received. And it was so overwhelming because the midwives and the doctors were crying together with me. And it was really, really heartwarming and supportive. And I got this pamphlet from the hospital telling me that you're not alone and stories of other Danish parents that have gone through loss. And they also had this big Facebook group of 2,000 people. And the first thing was like when I was in that group, it kind of felt a little more overwhelming because going yourself among 2,000 parents, and I was like, I was so angry at the world thinking that something so cruel could happen to 2,000 other people. So that was the first thing, like it was really overwhelming. And the second thing was the language, even though I speak and understand Danish, I'm not very fluent in it. So that actually restricted me to have like a really complete conversation about my loss or to be part of a community like that. And the other thing was, in Denmark, you were allowed to grieve as much as you want. For example, in the hospital, we were given time. We were given a lot of time to spend with Elliot. But when we actually called my family and friends in India to actually tell about that he has passed, the very first questions that I was asked was like really devastating, because the very first questions were like, okay, from an Indian doctor, like from my circle, she asked me like, okay, so did you travel anywhere in the last week? And did you roll over the bed? Like these kind of questions that I did not get from the Danish doctors are like, when they were crying immediately when I was talking to the other part of the world, these kind of questions was the first ones that I was asked. So that was the first step that I don't think I was in mom guilt myself. I've been asking a million questions in my head myself, like, what did I do that might have caused this? And this wasn't helpful, adding fuel to the fire. And immediately while we were and also after that, I told Elliot was taken to autopsy and he was brought back. So that took around like 5 days, I think, after our loss. So that process took a little longer. So we had to prepare for the funeral meanwhile. And he passed on February 27th and the funeral was on the 6th of March. So again, another friend actually wrote, oh, what are you still doing with him for such a long time? By now, you should have you should have moved on and like you're still having him. And why do you still have him? So that part was also like, okay, I don't think you're getting this. So that's also what I thought. Also after that, it was a complete silence from the other part of the world where in Denmark, I was able to receive a little bit of like practical help from my husband and from my Danish family, and they were there for me. But whenever someone from India would talk, then I would just like put my phone down and cry, because those conversations were not helping me at all. And they didn't understand what perspective I was telling, and they were like, complaining that I should have lived in India. If at all I lived in India, this would have not happened.
Oh.
And I also traveled to India while I was pregnant with Elliot. So they were also telling me, maybe you should have not traveled to India and back. So these kind of things that they were like guilty tripping, and all these questions that they asked like really put me into another zone. And that's the biggest difference that I saw in them. And they were like and one of the most important thing that I actually forgot to say was also like, while I had Elliot still in my arms, the only thing that I heard from them was like, oh, give him back. They actually treated him so morbid, that those kind of aspects that I didn't get from like any of the Danish community. Like nobody has experienced that. Like that's my child and I should be able to spend time with him. And I was allowed to bring him home. And even if I wanted to like go for a walk in a park with him in a stroller, that would have been completely fine. But since like I heard from this, from my friends and family from India, like telling me like give him back immediately, that actually stopped me from having a little more time or like taking my own decisions at that time, like what I should be doing with him. So that was, that actually was the point that actually I think about it after, and I said, okay, I should be able to spend time with him. And they were treating that as morbid, and that's not right.
Yes, the gift of time is one of the most one of the most healing things that we can offer ourselves after loss, that memory making, that gift of time. And it's interesting because I'm Indian as well, but I've been in Canada for my whole 40. I was born in India, but came here as a baby. So I've been in Canada for 41 years. But it's interesting. Our culture, Indian culture, is so beautiful. There's so much beauty in our culture, right? Like meditation and yoga and all those things have stemmed from, there's such richness and such wisdom in our culture. And yet what you're saying of those kind of comments that are furthering the guilt, that kind of looking at the loss of Elliot as something morbid, and kind of wanting it to go away, so to speak, is so prevalent in our culture. And it's really, for me, I've always found it such a disconnect to what our roots, what the culture is, and how sometimes our people respond to uncomfortable things is so disconnected.
Yeah. And I do think from a cultural perspective, we do have a respectful culture towards dead people. After someone is dead, actually my friend pointed out a very good thought that you bathe the dead body, you do a lot of rituals. And then when it's an adult person, then it's really different how they treat a dead body and how they actually take around the city before they end it with a funeral. They actually treat the body with respect.
Very true.
When it comes to a baby, and that's what I wasn't able to understand, because I did expect a little bit of respect for my son, and I wasn't getting that, just give him back to the hospital. No, I don't want to give him back to the hospital. I want to have a funeral for him. And that's something that's when I couldn't wrap around of some culture aspects. And also having his pictures or posting his pictures was considered morbid. Nobody wanted to see a dead baby. But
yeah, which is also, again, interesting, right? Because I remember in my my Nanaji and my Nanima's homes, those are my grandparents. I remember we would have pictures of their parents, their deceased parents, and they'd always have the flower, a lay, and it becomes a ritual, or not a ritual. What do people in other cultures call it? A space where you go that person who's deceased is honored and remembered in your home.
Yeah.
And that's a part, that's a very beautiful ritual that our culture has, but you're right. So many of the baby loss community, from those same people that does these beautiful rituals for other deceased loved ones, are feeling it's inappropriate to do this for a baby. And it's just, it's so interesting to me because what is the disconnect there? Why is it different? Elliot was a deeply loved person for you. Yeah. And why does our culture do it differently for those?
Absolutely. And also when you're 7 months pregnant, they do this whole bangled ritual thing. They put on a lot of bangles on you, they put on turmeric on your face, and they do this big banana leaf, and they give you all sorts of variety of food to eat. They do all that, and then the loss happens, and then immediately the next word was it wasn't meant to be, so you should just move on. He will come back to you. The soul will come back. So just don't worry about it. And after that, it's completely close blank, and there is no... And also, every time I speak to an Indian mom, and when she shares an experience of her loss in India, she always tells that there was no memory making after the loss in the hospital. She wasn't even able to hold her baby. She wasn't able to see. So they immediately after she gives birth, they take the baby away and the family is allowed to see them. I mean, the main person is the mother has to see the baby and bond with the baby, even though I know how hard it is to let go of the moment when they have to go. But the most satisfying thing that I experienced was to see and was able to spend time with them. And every time I hear a story from an Indian mom, it's very devastating because she is not even given a chance to hold and do any memory making. And even in the babies lived in ICU, and passed away, there is no memory box after that. Like no fingerprints, no footprints, nothing, no pictures. Like if at all the family took pictures in an ICU and that will be it. Like no other pictures they get. And it's not even encouraged to do so. So even in the medical system there, they're like, it's not encouraged. Even the doctors, they tell you like, okay, you will just have another baby and like no pamphlets are given. So no kind of support whatsoever. So they are just thrown into, and every time I think of it, like if I would have lived back in India, this would have been also my story. Mm-hmm. And that actually, that was the most like, it burnt in me that I have to do something about it. Because in my family, we have had baby loss. And I know how my women in my family have been like, is not able to talk about it. Because even after that, after the loss, the woman in my family who has gone through a loss, whenever they called me, they only cried. And no words would come out of their mouth, like no words. And it has happened 25 years ago, 30 years ago. And all they could do right now is like cry uncontrollably. And they cannot even like console me saying everything will be all right or something like that. Like, I think that is their unprocessed trauma that they are carrying. And when they saw it happening to me, history repeating itself in the family, and they literally couldn't take it at all. So,
wow, that gives me chills for so many reasons that I did not know that. I didn't know. So thank you for sharing that. I did not know that when in India, when there's a loss, that like the birthing person's just not even allowed to have time with their baby. It makes so much sense then where that disconnect is coming from, because mm-hmm. this is then generational, as you said, like that unprocessed trauma. This is generational trauma and a message that you don't get to grieve. Mm-hmm. This didn't happen, like literally didn't happen at all. At least in other countries, we're seeing some movement away from that, mm-hmm. like in Denmark and Canada. There's movement away from that, and that deeply impacts how somebody individually grieves. But as a whole, this intergenerational trauma is going to continue to be passed on if that is the message that India is giving, that this is something you just brush under the rug almost, it sounds like. So thank you for sharing that, because I didn't know that. And then how powerful that you are speaking and you've developed this like community, and that people who've had baby loss 25, 30 years later are without words and just a lot like having a space where they can, for the first time probably ever, feel the gravity of their loss. Like I can't even tell you, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, and another thing is also like, even our like, so we have created the community. We have a private Facebook page, Facebook group, and a page, and then an Instagram page. And even in the private group, like people are, they always like to have a personal conversation with you rather than have to like have a community grief or like to grieve in a community. In a group, like to tell their story out loud, or I think it's helpful for them to process one-on-one. So they really like the personal chat with us more than they can like talk in a group space. So like we are a support group, but we do focus on like really individually talking to them because they enjoy that more. And that's more helpful for them to do that instead of in a group.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point too, because I think that also is very aligned with like Indian culture of we are very private people, right? Mm-hmm. We growing up, my mom is always like, what will the neighbors think? What will this person think? So it makes, I think it makes culturally a lot of sense that that one-on-one support is very meaningful and probably feels like a safer space to let that emotion out.
And also like they feel safer to be in a private group than like if you want to like an Instagram post or like a Facebook post or comment on it or like comment a baby's name. And I think they really feel safer in a very much a private conversation than in a group conversation. So
totally, I think that makes so much sense. And it's really interesting because Danielle, and I'll let Danielle speak for herself, of course, but Danielle had lost her daughter, Emelina, at 38 weeks pregnant. So the two of you have very similar stories. And yet, like, I don't know, Danielle, I'll let you speak on maybe what's kind of coming up for you.
Yeah, so the stories are very similar. Agnes, my daughter, much like your son, I thought the pregnancy was fine. There was no risks. However, she was born still at 38 weeks. And it's interesting how culture plays a part. My hospital stay was slightly different than yours in the aspect that at least 10 years ago, we weren't able to take the baby home. So when you leave the hospital without your child, which has its own impacts. However, I am 100%. I was born in Canada. I was raised in Canada. Like, this is my space. However, my husband is from an Eastern European country. And it's been very interesting how there's certain things that you say, like, why would you want a picture? That's very morbid. That is how I was told. My mother-in-law said, like, why would you have pictures of your baby up in your house? And so, yes, Agnes, like, I can see how through the Indian culture and even through some of those Eastern European cultures where it's like, no, you don't need to have a dead baby's picture up. That's basically what she said. That's the translated version of what she said to me. And I was like, that's my child. So are you telling me that had she lived like 2 days, I could have had a picture up, but because she died in utero, I can't do that. So I can totally see how it would be very challenging for yourself, Agnes, to kind of be in a world where in Danish, it's okay to do this in that Danish culture, but in your home culture, it's not, because it's something we have had to struggle with. My husband and I've had to struggle with, because I was like, I'm going to do what I want and what I feel is right. However, like there was people that had issues with the urn sitting on my living room shelf.
Right.
And to be honest, we took it out of our living room and we put it in our bedroom because I could no longer handle that conversation of why would you have a dead baby's ashes on your shelf? So a lot of what you said, Agnes, although I have never experienced it from your culture, those were conversations that myself had with family members who were uncomfortable with the way that we chose and the way we choose to grieve our daughter.
Right.
So my question to you would be, is being that it was so challenging and you started the after baby, is there anything that you continue to be challenged with, being that you're still quite new in the journey of grief, from your culture or from your family? Or has that kind of reduced as the timeline has increased?
I would pretty much say we still like what I personally consider myself challenging is there's still not a lot of support for me being actively being part of a community like this, that to like leading a community, running a support group. They actually think that like some of my friends actually mentioned that, oh, she's just doing this as part of her early grief. That's what like people think. They don't really take it serious. Oh, she's just she went crazy. And I think the last thing I heard was like, oh, she really went crazy. She joined all these groups and she made her own groups. Now she is together with the other grieving moms, lighting candles for dead babies and making rituals. So nothing we say will enter into her until she gets another baby and she's starting to be happy with her life. So they actually like say that, okay, once I get another baby and move on with life, then things are going to be better. Then I'm going to be like, not be involved in a community like this. So that's what they think. Like, that's like my personal challenge.
Yeah. And so you are currently pregnant with your second.
Yeah.
And so does it make you a little bit nervous of what that support, well, you're not receiving support, but does it make you nervous of how things are going to look once this new baby arrives? And because you said they're thinking that as soon as you get another baby, mm-hmm. then you'll be fine. But yeah. From talking to Agnes and from both Danielle and I being in this baby loss community, we know that getting another baby does not take us out of the community. We're always a part of this community. Our children are always a part of us, and we will carry that with you. But how are you a little bit nervous on what that next path is going to look like for you?
Absolutely. And I think from hearing from parents like you who have gone through this journey and have had children after, I think I'm kind of a little bit mentally prepared for what's ahead, because I do gonna know people disappeared from the beginning of the first month. Like right now, it's almost going to be 2 years into our loss, and people disappeared. And every day it has become like less and less people do check in and stuff. And for them, like, that's what people are gonna think, like babies replace babies. So once I'm out of like, once I have another baby in hand, that I'll be okay. And other parents sharing their journey has actually mentally prepared me for what's little ahead. That's not true. And it's going to be a very different journey. Parenting after loss is going to be hard on itself. And also, I wanted to say something, but I actually think that support is going to be not there. But the reason I actually chose to start a support group and to be part of it is like, this is the legacy my son has left. And I do this for like selfish purposes. Like, I do want to speak of his name, and this is what I do in his name. And that's not going to change in a couple of years or like in 5 years, 10 years down the road. So this is like, personally, I feel it very therapeutic to talk to another lost mom and to remember her child, like, and to be part of this community and to offer support. And that's how I think, like, I'm carrying him forward in my life. That's the way I do. I carry, like, people grieve differently. People carry their children's name very differently. And what I would like to do for my child is like, okay, there is an Indian community. And when they ask of my story, I'm going to tell, like, I had a son named Elliot and he's now not with me. So I know what it is that you're going through. So only by telling my story and telling his name, that's the way that I carry him forward in my life. And that's not going to change when his sibling is going to be here. And that's also the truth. Like, I do have two brothers, and I should have had a sister, and she's not here with us. So I do think like we three, those ones are living, are like three individual beings. And if Elliot would have lived, he would have had like a very different personality. He would have had very different story, what he would have done and how he would have lived his life would be very different from his sibling.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, I think I do have a clear distinction that his sibling is not going to replace Elliot. And they both will have a place in my heart all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So that's I mean, the part that I do for the grief community is like how I carry Elliot forward.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes complete sense. That's exactly what Danielle and I do, right? This our entire work that we do with the charity is how we parent our babies that are not here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and for both Danielle and I, it's been 10 years since our loss was, and we're still here. We're still here because your children are always with you,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that what you're doing, Agnes, because you're providing that support one-on-one and like individually and one Indian person at a time, but it's also, you're really starting to change the conversation as a community, right? And right. And my question to you is how do you do that? If you could change how Indian people are supporting our community members that are going through baby loss, how can they do it differently?
So that's like another community challenge that we are thinking about. A lot of vision. We do have a vision to do mass education about grief and baby loss. We are trying to talk to the psychologist, and we have had like a couple people connecting to us who are actually doing research on this area, and we are making them talk also on, like, we are bringing them on our Instagram lives and like asking them from their perspective, from a cultural perspective. So they are giving their opinions on, like, they are giving their education on grief and baby loss from what they have experienced. And we are trying to also do something in the medical hospitals and departments. Like, we still think that there's a lot of step that we need to take. We have to take in order to bring our Indian community, like, the awareness, the basic awareness of what grief feels like and baby loss feels like, right? So we are trying to do that. And the first steps is like, we are trying to educate through a lot of Instagram posts and bringing out the stories of Indian mothers' loss. So asking them to pushing them a little forward to tell their stories. And those are really, really powerful. We don't really have many stories yet, but the ones we have are like, they do really speak words, and they are sitting on our website. I think that's like the first step, bringing their stories in. And we are trying to educate during the holidays, like how they can support their family or friends. So it's purely right now on online basis, and we do want to go in to the physical part of the system. So that will be our like long-term goal to do that. But the very first steps that we are taking is bringing the voice of Indian women into a platform.
Mm-hmm. So, which is so powerful. It's like that, as I mentioned before we recording, that's like a foundational mission of ours at the center mm-hmm. here, is that we elevate the marginalized voices and the stories that are often not told in this space of parenting and baby loss. And so it's really cool because we're in Canada, you're in Denmark. Our work though is making ripples, and like this is how we change cultures. Yeah. This is how we change narratives. This is how we change people's grieving hearts, right? Is we individually make these ripples. And eventually, if there's enough of us around the world, those ripples will turn into waves, and they will make an impact. You're already making a huge impact, but it's just so beautiful to see. I've watched a couple of your Instagram stories. And yeah, I got to say, as an East Indian woman living in Canada, that was the first time I saw all East Indian women speaking about baby loss, other than the group that we run here, but like on Instagram, a very visible platform. It was the first time ever. And it was breathtaking. And that's why I reached out to you, because like what you're doing is needed and it's important. And what you said today, everything you said today shows the importance of why culturally sensitive and inclusive support is imperative. Because if we are not including cultures and beliefs and faiths into the conversations around pregnancy or infant loss, then we're not supporting a good portion of the people that need support. So I find it just like really, really breathtaking. So thank you. Thank you for being here. And what a legacy you're leaving that Elliot is leaving for him and your family. Like, what a legacy. I always say this to Danielle, right? Like, the legacy that we're building for our children is something to be very proud of.
Absolutely true. Yeah.
Danielle, do you want to ask Agnes?
Yeah. So one of the questions we ask all of our guests is, if you could go back in time and tell yourself something that you know now, what would you tell yourself?
Okay, that is a lovely question. I think I would say that you will survive this no matter how hard it looks right now, that you will survive. And what I mean by survival is like, it's not like an heroic act, like sitting. I consider myself a rebel in the family, and like, I always fight against something. But for me, after my loss, I have learned to sit with my emotions very deeply, like letting myself to be in the space and to honor it, and to let it take its course. Like, the surrender that I did to myself became the meaning of survival for me. So, I mean, surviving is not about like something very heroic. It doesn't have to be like me surrendering to my emotions, and like to be in the space itself, like, have learned me a lot. So I would say to my old self, like, if I sit there here a little longer, then I would survive this. I don't have to fight it. So that's what I would say.
No, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. And if there's any of our listeners who are Indian and are feeling and resonating with what Agnes has shared today, you can connect with Agnes's community on Instagram at After Baby Loss, and the website is also afterbabyloss.com. And if you're in Calgary, our center offers a free peer support group in partnership with the Punjabi Community Health Services. It is spoken in Punjabi, Hindi, and Urdu, and that information is available on our website, which is pilsk.org. You are not alone, and you're absolutely right, Agnes, you will survive. And we're just so blessed to have heard your and Elliot's story today. So thank you so much for being here and for the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll see you next time on Beyond the Loss.